Moncrief on News Talk.
It is time for Parenting with Joanna Fortune. Afternoon@newstalk.com is the email address if you'd like to send a question in for Joanna. Afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
I've recently been diagnosed with a medical condition, which means that I could have a stroke at any time. I've had two so-called mini strokes in the past year and was in hospital for both, but fully recovered. I do not fit the profile for this type of diagnosis and have a healthy lifestyle. Doctors are still investigating and I do not have a treatment plan yet. I have a beautiful, intelligent, kind 11-year-old at home and I don't know how to tell her or even if I should tell her. My husband works long hours and farms as well, so my daughter and I spend a lot of time together and I'm very afraid that I will have a stroke when she's with me. I'm also afraid of all the other possibilities that come with this. For example, if I do have a stroke, how bad will I be? Will I survive? Will I be incapacitated? Will my daughter have to help me daily, etc.? I spoke to her about my first incident when it happened, but she didn't want to know and brush me off. So I explained to her whilst we were driving and just asked her to listen and told her I'm available to answer any questions she might have. But that was when I didn't know what was wrong. Since this worrying diagnosis, I'm struggling to deal with it myself, let alone try to talk to her about it. Please help. What should I do? And how can I help her to understand without making her anxious? My daughter is diabetic and already has had a lot on her plate with the daily management of this too. So I don't want to overload her either. Wow, they have a lot to deal with.
Oh, that's a lot. And you know what I'm thinking as you're reading there? This person has had two strokes, mini strokes in the last year, plus all of this investigation in terms of what's underpinning this, what's causing it. They're still investigating to come to a treatment plan. That's quite the year to have. As the parent, your own anxiety can only be sky high. That's so much. And also to be told you have some condition that means you could have a stroke anytime.
Think of
the anticipatory arousal that that leaves you in, and you know that you're in this heightened state of any moment, you become so hypervigilant to micro cues from your body. You could misread cues because of all of that, especially at this time when you're digesting that information and trying to process and make meaning of it, which is a process in and of itself. Just processing it is a process.
Yeah.
So this line here towards the end, I'm struggling to deal with it myself, let alone try to talk to her about it. That's the starting point. The starting point here is you deserve space to talk and think and feel and cry and wonder and fear and all of that out loud in a space where you're not worried about anyone but yourself.
Mm.
You're not thinking about anyone's feelings but your own. And that would be typically in a professional setting, a psychologist, a psychotherapist. Maybe the hospital has somebody on staff they could refer you to. If not, they could certainly support you in finding somebody local who's suitably qualified and accredited to do that job with you. That would be the first thing. Step one, focus on yourself, because the best way you will support your daughter and your husband, but also your daughter through this, is to be in a place within yourself where you have answers to the questions she's going to ask or could ask, where you feel that you've come to a place where, yes, I understand this. I can live with this now, not under it, but with it. And you're not there yet. So I think that is the best thing to do for your daughter.
And say nothing to daughter for the moment.
Not yet. I just think at the moment, you know, if you have told her that, you know, they're investigating things, you've told her some information so far. But at the moment, if you were to say, oh, and now they're saying I could have a stroke anytime. And if she says, but why? What's the plan? You don't have that answer yet.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's so raw. There's a feeling, I could be wrong, Sean, but there's a feeling from this that this is very recent news.
Mm, yeah.
And I just think give yourself even a couple of weeks just to digest it. And then absolutely, you want to put a clear plan in place should you take ill. And it might be enough to say to your daughter, talk her through it first, but then I'm going to put this on the fridge door. If you were to come home or if you were to come into the room and I was unwell, like I have been in the past year, this is what you would do. You would call an ambulance. This is the number. You would talk to the doctor. This is what you would say. Here's any relevant information. And write that up, talk her through it, and just say, that's just there as a just in case. But I do think that's important, because while you might want to take time, you know, in terms of how to tell your daughter, in the short term, there is something about, well, what if something happens while you're doing that?
Yeah.
So just having a clear plan in place, and a drive chat is a great way to do this, like they've already done. You know, you can share with her on a drive, you know, this is the plan. We're still working on what's going on with me, but we do know there's something causing these things to happen. And that means until we better understand it and have a plan in place, it could happen again. Because of that, I just want to make sure you'd be okay. So if this happens, here's what you do. Step one, two, three, then doctors will come and take care of me. And then you will be going to neighbor, granny, auntie, whoever it might be. But you put a very clear plan in place and talk her through it. And then grow that narrative as you know more, as you're feeling better able to talk about it, and as she's getting older, you're going to grow and pad it out in time. But don't try to get a difficult piece of medical news like this and immediately, and it's so typical of us parents, isn't it? Our focus immediately goes to my children.
Yeah.
You know, and of course it does. But the
In fairness, it's a lot.
Oh, it's a huge amount.
A responsibility to put on the 11-year-old.
And it might be too much.
Yeah.
Like, Sean, that's the reality. And that's why I think you've got to get the whole picture yourself to know what are the basics that your 11-year-old does need to know, especially if it's just the two of them in the house a lot. There are things that she needs, who to call, how to do that, where to go. Those steps. But beyond that, there may need to be a broader support plan put in place in terms of somebody else who might come into the house, neighbours nearby who could be brought in actively into a support plan. But again, until you know the whole picture, just deal with what you have in the now moment.
Yeah,
absolutely. And mind yourself through this. Yeah, I really do mean that.
I wonder, can anybody get a panic button that maybe...
I would think yes. I would imagine that's going to be part of the treatment plan.
Yeah. We have three boys, aged 10, 9 and 7. We felt lucky to have had our children so close together in age, so that as young children they would play together, grow up together and have the same shared experiences, which will bring them closer together, hopefully meaning they become close as adults. However, while they do have some fun at times, most of the time they fight, annoy each other and generally don't get on particularly well. They're constantly trying to get each other in trouble rather than helping each other. We try to teach them about looking after each other and being kind to one another, but they just don't. The two older ones are old enough to go to school unaccompanied, but now they don't want to go together and walk separately. Is there anything we can do as parents to instill and encourage closeness in our children? Or is this something that normally happens organically? I.e., are we overthinking it?
Absolutely you are.
Yeah, three boys.
Absolutely overthinking it. And I found myself wondering, as parents, have you got siblings?
Oh, yeah.
Because there's a very idealistic, romanticised notion of sibling connection here. We'll have them close together, they'll be best pals, they'll share experiences, they'll grow up together. I mean, I'm somewhere in the pecking order of five of us, and this sounds exactly like growing up with siblings. And as adults, we are all, I think, most of the time, very friendly with each other.
Yes, you know.
But I don't think that was any kind of master plan. I think that's about giving people and not treating siblings as this kind of group herd mentality, but seeing you have three children, they happen to be very close in age. And it does sound like you planned this. So, you know, think this through. You did this to yourselves. But they're fighting. They're annoying each other. They don't always get on well. They want to walk to school together, but not remotely together. Because within this, they're trying to find out who they are themselves.
Of course.
Your 10-year-old just wants to be, oh, I don't want my brother with me. I want to be with my friends. I'm prioritizing peers, the outside world, all very typical. So is your 9-year-old, hot on the 10-year-old's heels in the same developmental phase, because they are developmental competitors right now. And they are very much in each other's lives, aren't they? You know, in lots of ways here, and in each other's interests by the sounds of it. It may well be hard for them to find space. And one of the ways when you can't find space is you fight for it. And you fight with those who are in your space. It does sound very typical. And I think you've got to hold the boundaries on this. Absolutely. It's not kind of hands off the wheel and a free for all and hope, you know, roll of the dice, they'll become good later. You do want to allow their independent interests and personalities and expressions to emerge while holding that boundary that in our family, we treat each other with respect. Focus. You're not going to stop them fighting, because, God, if I could crack that for siblings, I'd have a great retirement plan. But what you are going to do is focus on repair following those rows they have? How do they come back together? How do you practice togetherness and collaborative interaction in your family? And that's not up to the boys. That's up to you as parents to facilitate that. I would talk about family play. Make sure that you've got a weekly board game night, a weekly movie night, a weekly outdoor activity. So 3 times a week, there is run by parents, facilitated by parents.
There's an opportunity for them to fight with each other.
There is an opportunity for connection, Sean, and collaborative facilitate a connection. And the rest of the time, don't get pulled in as a referee.
Yeah.
Really
yeah.
just saying, look, it sounds like you need a break from each other. Go take a break. Everyone retreats to their corner. Come back together. Have a simple practice in your house. You all eat dinner at the table together. That's a reason everyone has to come to the table. Take turns when you're at the table. What was great about your day today? Is there anything you wish you could change? So they're getting to hear and connect with each other. And otherwise, you've just got to Teflon coat yourselves and let some of this slide off you, because they are really young, but they're at those develop. I think, and anyone listening with kids this age will probably, or had kids this age, reflect back, this could run until their mid-teens that they're a bit like this.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
you really should see a bit of a change. I don't want to say, though, Sean, like, there are people listening here who know you can have siblings close in age and you just don't click with them. You just don't get on. You tolerate each other. You have a healthy respect for each other, but you're not pals. You're not friends. And other people who would say, you know, yeah, my siblings are my best friends. You've just got to facilitate mutual respect at home, opportunities to connect, and then let them also practice independence and be their own people.
Yeah. Someone says, don't talk to me. I have 4 brothers. One of them is my twin. It's a hard knock life.
Yeah. But we survived.
Can't imagine it was. My eldest boy has recently started school. He was very excited to start, loved his first few days, but exhaustion seems to be kicking in. He's a very energetic boy and a chatterbox and finds sitting still difficult. He came home this afternoon and started crying. It seemed to be a combination of exhaustion and being overwhelmed with a reward system at school that meant he didn't get a sticker that day. He has 2 younger siblings, so it can be a busy house. After listening to him and giving him a cuddle, I asked him did he want to go upstairs for some quiet time, which he said he did. He had some screen time in his room for about 30 minutes. After the break, he came down much more regulated and was in good spirits all afternoon and had some outdoor play. Do you have suggestions on how to manage that initial hour after school when a lot of the day's feelings can come out? I don't want him to become too dependent on screen time every day after school, but I do feel he needs some time to unwind. Also, any suggestions on how to deal with the highs and lows of the school reward system would be great.
Oh, this is so relatable, isn't it? And I've said it on here. I'm not a fan of reward charts, reward systems, stickers for this sticker. You know, I'm just not. I think it teaches kids that something is only worth doing if there's a reward.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think it's only then you get the good stickers are one colour and the negative stickers are, you know, it's just a mess. And again, look at this little guy. He comes home crying because he didn't get a sticker. Mm. And you see, that's really subjective, because in different classrooms, like I was talking to somebody who, you know, and their school gives stickers if you turn up, you know, if you get your if you get your books out.
Should parents not get the sticker for that?
I was like, you know, we should all be getting stickers. But, you know, if you do the basics, it's very much effort over outcome. And what that means is every child in the class, no matter their level of functioning, will get stickers.
Yeah.
Because it's impossible not to get one. There will be kids who get loads, but everybody will get one. And that's inclusive. But when you're doing these kind of reward systems that kids get left out or don't reach the mark, and then you begin to see that increasing gap between the ones who are flying it and the ones who are doing just well, getting there, turning up and getting the books out, I just don't think they work. And I would, anyone listening who's in the education business, just think about how you're framing this.
Yeah.
Because it is, and especially when you're 5, approximately, just started school. So then I'm thinking about this little guy who's, you know, energetic, busy, talks, and finds it hard to sit still. I mean, that's just beautifully 5. 5-year-olds aren't built to sit still.
Yeah.
Just like they're not built to stand neatly and orderly in a line outside the door waiting for a bell to ring to then move. This is all a learning curve for them. They need movement. They need activity. They need help through transitions from indoor time to outdoor and back to indoor time. And it is such early days. Stickers for everyone, I say, right? It's just, it's early days right now. So all of that said, I can really relate to this little guy and the struggle he's having. Then I just think that this parent's like, what will I do in that hour? I think this parent is handling it really well. You know, he came in and he was upset. You listened to him. You gave him a cuddle. You asked, did he want to go upstairs to rest? Like, really beautifully done. Then he did have some very ring-fenced time on his screen. And then had, when he came down calmer, had outdoor time. This worked really well for you. I hear that you don't want the screen all the time there, but play with what's working for your child. It sounds like that ring fence time of the screen didn't dysregulate him.
No.
It might on if he had it every day. So I take the parent's point, but it didn't in this instance. And it's a good reminder that screen time doesn't affect all of our kids in the same way. And we have to go with the individual child. Think movement and think feed them, hydrate them and play with them. That's the kids come in and the water beakers we lovingly filled for them at start of the day are still full at the side of the bag and they didn't stop to have a drink. They're often ratty and tired because they needed to eat something and drink something. Start with that. Don't start with homework. How was your day? What happened? Let's do this. Let's do that. Let him move. Outdoor time first.
Yeah.
Sometimes we can get that in on the way home from school. It depends on what your route or routine is. But if not, get it when you get home. And a bit of playfulness then. Something quite structured, I think. You know, once he's had his outdoor time, and it might be you come in and you play a little board game. I've already mentioned board games or a jigsaw. Something that's really kind of beginning, middle, end. Then there might be junior infants. I'm hoping it's something very small if there's homework, like really, really small. And you do that very quickly and then he gets more outdoor time. Play is so important after school because that's how children are going to process those highs and lows. And we don't want to jump in and try to go, oh, boo, stickers, boo. Like, we might think that, but we're not going to tell the kids that. So instead, you're going to say, it sounds like that was really disappointing and you had a really hard day. And thanks for telling me about it. That's it.
Yeah,
you're not going to call the teacher. You're not going. No. Yeah. This is not that level. There's no need for that kind of intervention. Stickers at home are another thing to consider. I mean, you know, stickers are like a currency in childhood, but like stickers at home where you decide, well, in this house, you went to school today. You tried your best. You get a sticker.
OK, yeah,
there you go. And he gets a little sticker from you every day, no matter what.
Yeah. For going.
Just for trying his best.
Yeah. OK.
You know, and it doesn't matter if that was a great day or a tricky day, just for trying his best.
My son is 3.5, going through a major no phase. I've one other son. He didn't have a massive no phase. He still did everything. It just took him longer. My youngest now is refusing everything. He won't eat. He won't sleep. Won't get in the bath. He screams and cries when I ask him to do anything. I'm at my wit's end. I know he must be exhausted too, but what do I do? How do you negotiate with a 3-year-old when his answer to everything is no?
Well, you don't negotiate with a 3-year-old. I mean, they can go much louder and longer than we can at that age. So you pick your battles and you get really, really good at picking your battles with them. I do think, you know, he must be exhausted. I agree, but yet they can keep going.
Yeah.
So they can run on exhaustion. Don't let that kid you. The one thing that came up for me was immediately, how is his speech? In general, his vocabulary, his verbal expression, how is his speech? Now, I'm not expecting it to be, he's 3.5.
Yeah.
But has he got a good enough verbal expression, a range of expression? Because no is often a way that kids this age, they use it to mask what is really underdeveloped emotional fluency. So it's easier just to say no than say I'm overwhelmed with that extra demand you're placing on me. Or it's easier to say no than not tonight. That's not what I thought I was having for dinner. And that's really knocked me off now the way you've changed the plans. They're not going to say things like that. So it's easier to say no. So no is often that kind of catch-all. I'm also wondering at 3.5 and it's major no phase, which is typical. I do want to say that. But just because something's typical doesn't mean it's very difficult to deal with. How much outdoor active time in play is he getting? At his age, he needs a lot and he probably needs more than you think he needs.
Yeah.
Like we're talking a few hours a day of really robust, active, rough and tumble, roly poly outdoor play, regardless of whether just put the right clothing on and get him outdoors, because that's going to allow him to expend a lot of energy. And that change of environment really resets those overwrought, little overstimulated brains as well. And getting outdoors is the easiest way to change a field of vision and reset with environment. How much screen time? Again, just we've been talking about it, but little to none for him. And when I say little, I mean a really little. There's a reason all those kids' shows that are aimed at this age are 5-minute long episodes.
Yeah.
They're supposed to watch it for 5 minutes, not back to back, episodes for half an hour. So watch some of that and watch times of the day. If you can get a pattern to when is he peak knowing and when is it not and what's going on around that. Ensure that he's got a lot of sensory body related play. So sand, water, Play-Doh, dancing, shaking, moving his body. Stop, start, play, like musical statues. Play musical statues at home. It's really good for impulse control as well, because he has to take his cue from you and he has to hold back. And just give him some structured choices so he can use his no in a safe, boundaried way. You know, do you want milk or water? Start with that. Do you want milk? You don't? Do you want water? So he's getting to say no, and he's getting to, you know, exert that kind of little bit of independence. A small chore would be good for him at very small. He's 3.5. But something small, put his jammies under his pillow, straighten the duvet, put his laundry in the basket, bringing his little cup and plate from table over to kitchen counter. Chores that he can do to give him independence, that should help with this phase as well.
Yeah. Actually, one texter says, I had a student teacher in the last year for infants. I explained to her I don't use any reward system. She said she had to. The college have it as part of the training.
I'm aware of that, actually. Yeah, I spoke to someone recently who told me that, because I was aware it has suddenly, this year and last year, even the year before, it's become a really big thing again, because it had almost gone. But it's huge now, the all different ways of doing stickers and rewards.
You wonder, are they being influenced by Big Sticker? We're probably an industry worth billions, no doubt.
No doubt.
Joanna, thanks a million, as ever. Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.